This is the Echo Network.
Coming to Westport Inn presents the Roman Report with Casey Roman.
I had a board member of the sports atmosphere in Kansas City,
Michael Engel.
And I am Charles Lane, aka KC Royal Man, and we are back in the Man Cave with 3 of 4 show. We're joined by the regulars of Chris Kambler and Jeff Hurt. How's it going? And then Michael's out. He's on his way to go get a little toasty and have some fun at a wedding reception in Iowa. So they'll be dancing in the cornfield with us. And so we're joined in his spot this week by the French Quarter KC, Justin Ivey. Justin, how are you
doing? Doing well, I guess, John.
We're doing well. We're always doing well. So, obviously, this is a Friday night show. If you're listening live, you know that. If you're not listening live, we're normally on Fridays from 7 to 8, but that's not true for the month of March. Just go to RoadmanReport.com for updates and at RoadmanReport on Twitter. So, how's everybody doing tonight? Everybody feeling good? Feeling loose on Friday night?
The Tigers.
Fantastic work, John.
That local Big 12 action. Who do you root for, Justin?
I'm an Oklahoma fan, but my girlfriend goes to KU, so right now,
so after we get done with that 4-hour draft, we're going to do a little bit of a show and a live show, hopefully. Chris's equipment will work out this first time. Hopefully
Chris will still be working out by that time.
Yes. I think we need to take a training session on how to run the equipment before then, because Chris will have 4 hours to get started getting stockered. So
yeah.
After we do that show, at that point, we've also grouped up with the Tweet Up PC, and all of their March birthdays are going to be down there. I think I might throw down $50 in a Kelly's gift card. So Kelly's is going to be the place.
It's not even a real thing. Well, maybe. See, I Sam Levy all the time in spring training, but maybe he can put it together for a couple of starts. So.
Well, you know, with Chen Sanchez, it didn't do well, and I got Twitter on fire, and I kind of, Sanchez worries me a little more than Chen. Probably, you know, they only told Chen to focus on one part of the plate and do one specific thing, and that's when he didn't look at it. Maybe he's just bad, and maybe it'll take him a little bit to get warmed up, you know, who knows. But I got crucified on Twitter for saying that, hey, don't get too excited at one start, because, you know.
No, absolutely.
If I go against contrary opinion, then I'm being, just, yeah, you're just being, he's doing, you know, just being drinking the Kool-Aid. But I don't know if, I'm not ready to get too excited about Chen. Sanchez worries me because he's coming off the injury, but again, I'm not ready to get too upset about that either. But Mendoza looked good. That's scary. Because I just don't want them simply to get down to make real money. So,
what am I part of Lex Mendoza being on 25?
I'm sure he's a great guy. You know, he's a real estate Lex Mendoza.
Jeff and Chris and a good friend, Joseph, I mean, of French Quarter KC, but we're
retained on the phone for the second time on the Rome Airport by Jason Parks, international man of mystery and diary writer and baseball prospectus writer and host, or I guess the co-host of the Baseball Prospectus podcast. How are you doing today, Jason? By the way, there are absolutely no photographs of you on the internet. I don't know if that's by design or just a
question. Why do you have pictures of me?
Is that actually you?
Yeah.
That's a great picture. This one here,
yeah.
I've got. But,
Twitter, that's me. That's my avatar is actually, that's my face.
It's the
mustache, which I shaved.
I was actually in football position. I also saw creases on the internet, so I thought maybe that was there. It was just a Danny Zuko picture, and you said,
no.
So you're fresh out of the meth house and into your palatial estate to steal from your show down there in Arizona now?
Yeah, I'm in the house. It's, look, I have to say, I've been coming down here for years. This is my seventh spring training. This is the fourth one in a row that I've spent, more than a month here. I usually stay at this, old folks home type of place. It's bad. There's 30-year-old meth heads and 90-year-old, elderly. And it's a bad combo. It's in a bad side of town. And, it's not really conducive for a good head. But here, I come back from the field and I'm all, amped up to ride, and I have a clean environment to do so. So it really helps.
Yeah, and you don't just write about baseball and baseball perspectives. You've got a new little project going on over there. And it's your diary, which maybe, I don't care what the haters say, that may be one of the greatest pieces of writing that has ever been on the internet.
Well, I appreciate that. I've actually I received an email from a scouting director who said, I'm not trying to humble brag here, but he said, this is fantastic. I really love it. You're never going to work in baseball.
Well, you got that going for you.
Wonderful.
And then once that came out, we obviously emailed up that back and forth and talked to me and just had a little laugh over it. It's good stuff, definitely.
I appreciate it. I think I have four or five more before I'm done. So,
well, I'm looking forward to it. Before we get down and dirty with what you're seeing from Royals Camp, let's since we're not as time restricted this time as we were the last time. We rented a studio before. Now we have our very own little man cave here in the Candler Estate, which is our producer's house in the. Yeah, he's been good enough to put up a little studio, but tell us a little bit about you and how you ended up at Baseball Prospectus and how you ended up on the podcast and those kind of things.
I didn't come from a baseball background. I necessarily come from an art background. As you can kind of put that out in my writing a little bit, it's a little bit, I don't want to say progressive, but I come from a drawing and painting school, and I've been trying to incorporate more artistic things into the baseball stuff to kind of bridge my two loves. That's something I always struggled to do in high school and college, was trying to find a marriage of those two things. And I think that, finally getting a platform like Baseball Prospectus that allows me to do that is great. I met Kevin when I was doing the Rangers blog. We hit it off. He's definitely one of my best friends. It's not just an act. And so we decided to start a show together, and it ended up being kind of popular, so that was really cool, and we enjoyed doing it. And, it's really... It's brought me to another level in what I'm able to do, and I'm appreciative of the VP people for letting me do that.
And then that opened the door. You guys actually started meeting up, and I believe it in the .9 episode, or it was either in the .9 episode or when we had Kevin on, I don't remember which, that he talked about when you guys started doing the show, that he was going to do it regardless of what Baseball Prospectus said, and they picked it up because they're obviously forward-thinking enough, and that's how you got into Baseball Prospectus, right?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't a part of Baseball Prospectus. I was doing my own thing at the time. I was writing for a Rangers blog, doing that prospect stuff. I was working like a 9-to-5 job for the most part. I was Jason, but I was just kind of a quiet Jason to get into the third person. And I started doing the show with Kevin, which kind of just sprung from a conversation we had in a bar. We went to a bar and had some drinks, and it was like 2 hours of us just laughing, and it was basically the show. We basically just did the show in a bar, and we decided just to recreate that every week, and so that's what we try to do.
And your show is definitely different than any podcast, and there's things that we've tried to emulate on our show, and as Kevin said, that you guys almost have a really bad show, because it's just nothing, and it's just a road to disaster, so, which makes me laugh, because it's so, so popular, and as it shows with the Facebook group, and Kevin following on Twitter, and like you said, you kind of are the quieter guy of the two. You're not as out there, on Korean TV, and you're on the road now for it. I mean, it's a little bit of difference there. Why is that, Kevin?
show every time when he can come on because his faith matter. He talks to everybody in baseball, and everybody in baseball listens to him. It's important. What he says is it's important. As for me on the show, you know, I kind of demur a little bit to him. I let him do his thing, and I say something that I hopefully my words carry a lot of weight because I don't just ramble on. And when I do, it can be a bit aggressive, and it's not always conducive for radio platforms. You know, I'm coming on, I'm dropping F-bombs, I'm talking about sexual things. I crossed the line. I don't know how you guys appreciate it, but you know, I've done like 13 radio spots this week, so I mean, I've been busy once I've been out here, but I'm not in Kevin's league when it comes to that stuff.
And that was actually my question, because I don't know, I'm sure nationally it has as well, but at least in Kansas City, we kind of hear your advice as far as Kevin's concerned, because he had, maybe the last week or week before, we had multiple spots on one of the local radio stations. They came up with different hosts and started talking. I was going to ask you, you just kind of answered the question. They had 13 spots this week, but how does that kind of take it up now? You notice with you, since the podcast has as much success as it has, and you kind of people are asking you on more and more, and that's something that you're doing more often.
Yeah, I mean, the podcast is definitely helping in that regard. You know, a lot of the stuff I do for Baseball Perspectives, if it's straightforward, that market might come and try to get me to come on. The problem is that I write things like the diary, and you don't know what you're going to get. You know, we got to have this person to come on who can, you know, articulate thoughts about the prospects in, you know, Team A system, or is this person going to come on and be a complete lunatic? So, I mean, it's. I guess I have to prove that I can play both sides.
Prospect website. What was the name of that website again?
Texas Farm Bureau. Texas Farm Bureau. Yeah, it's just my prospect site. I use it to, because I have a lot of equity built up in the Ranger system because I've been watching them for so long. So since I stay out here and surprise, and I see a lot of them, I figured I might as well be able to exploit that a little bit. So that's, I have a Texas farm system site.
Well, and we get very, very lucky here in Kansas City because we happen to share the complex with the Rangers. And so you also, not only because I'm sure that the Royals farm system has been the epicenter of prospect world for the last couple of years, but you've also been watching a lot of Rangers. So you are one of the best people to talk to about how our Royals are doing, because you've been watching these guys the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching them when the system was chugging along a little bit, and then when the first wave came through, the Hosmer wave, it was impressive. You know, I could see these kids from the very beginning, starting at the complex level and watching them mature. And then now the second wave and the third wave, or starting Bubba Starling being the third wave, coming in, and you start to really see, like, man, the Royals have a lot of talent, especially at the lower levels. I mean, even though a lot of the guys have graduated, there's still a lot of talent in the Royals system.
And you were talking about Hosmer a little bit already. We're going to kind of jump around between some good stuff. So we'll jump right in. Referencing the diary that is available on Baseball Perspectives. I believe it's actually one of the free reads on Baseball Perspectives. So you go to baseballperspectives.com, type in his marks, and find his prospects will break your heart, spring training diary. In days 8 and 9, you seem to have developed a little love affair for Mr. Eric Hosmer. What romance building there?
I started it last year. I spent some time watching him up close in the backfield, taking cages and hitting in the live BP and whatnot. And, that's before the season. I was like, man, this kid is, he could be rookie of the year. He's ready to play the majors. Now I'm looking at him, I'm like, this guy could be an MVP before he leaves Kansas City. And I'm sorry to say that, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, actually, that's a good question. How did you feel about last year? I mean, obviously, we're quite biased here in Kansas City, but with the way the rookie voting, turned out, we were not too happy, considering, I fell on the side when I thought, there was someone, and I was fine with that. But where did you come out on that? Did you think maybe I was pushing the line, or did you think you just not quite there? Did you think the voting turned out right?
You know what? I mean, this is not a smart ass answer, but I really don't care. Helton was a hell of a rookie and a hell of a season, but so did Hosmer. And if it went to Hosmer, I would have been fine with it, because I think on a talent level, let's take away the stats for a second. Let's take away why people vote. Let's just look at the talent. Hosmer's the man. He was the most talented rookie of the year. He was the most talented player in his
got to see a young Raiders pitcher going up against Hosmer, a guy who hasn't really faced a lot of major league talent. The first guy, he got him out of his deal, he got him out. Hosmer comes up, his sequencing changes completely. I mean, he was, I didn't see him shaking, but he basically was shaking.
That's good.
That's respect.
That's a real leader. So now, jumping off of, I'm going to go back to this diary entry. Because this diary entry that you just did actually has a lot of really good baseball info, mixed in with some good comedy. But when you go to spring training, just to kind of bring it back to the basics, when you go to spring training, what are you looking for? Like, you guys talk about, and I'm going to combine two questions here, you guys talk about that minor league stats don't matter. And so you don't worry about those, but spring training stats, I assume, matter at some point. At what point do you worry? Because, like, people here are already jumping off the chain and saying, it's just bringing away, and the world's burning down, and our starting pitching is worse than we thought. You know, where do you kind of jump in on spring training stats?
Well, I don't really care about the stats. If I happen to see it, I will see what I'm seeing. You know, I watched Chan the other day, and he was terrible. It's also how he was terrible. It's not just the fact that he was terrible. His stuff wasn't very good. It was very middle of the road at best. And with that type of stuff, you really have to be fine to get results at the major league level against major league quality hitting. I mean, when you're going up against a potent lineup, you have to either hit your spots or have stuff. And Chan doesn't have a lot of stuff, and so he's got to hit his spots. And when he misses his spots, he's garbage. And so that's what I want to see. I don't really look at the numbers. I want to see what a player is doing. Like earlier today, Martin Perez for the Rangers took on Clayton Kershaw. Martin Perez was hit around, you know. But he's a 20-year-old, and he's got really good stuff, and he showed it. He was just hit. If you look at the numbers, it looks like he had a bad game. But he didn't. He had a very impressive game if you factor in that he's very young, and he brought three quality pitches to the table that just happened to be hit by major league quality talent. You know, so that's, I think people can get wrapped up in spring training numbers. I think you need to look at spring training product to see what a pitcher is bringing. That way you can forecast how he's going to be in the regular season. I think the numbers will be there if the stuff is there.
Yeah.
You know, but Kennedy doesn't have the stuff.
Now, as far as that spring training product goes, there are scouts that we're getting this information from. There are also people with the Royals, people, you know, reporters and whatnot that are observing these things, but they are observing maybe 10% of the, let's say they'll see 10% of what Bruce Chen puts on the field for a spring training, for an entire spring training. Is it a bad outing? Like, you saw Bruce Chen, you said he sucked, you saw Mike Montgomery, and you were real down on him, on his outing as well. How much weight does that have? Does one bad outing in spring training, I'm not necessarily saying from a scouting report, but let's say Mike Montgomery has a bad outing, is that the, is it like Mariano? Does that bunch you down? You know, or you know, Bruce Chen, I would guess, could probably go out there and throw a couple of eggs versus Mike Montgomery, who's trying to fight for a spot that really probably has to be nails every outing, at least early on. How much? I guess my question is, how much does a bad outing hurt somebody in spring training?
Well, I mean, I think those are two different players. First of all, Bruce Chen is Bruce Chen. He's the Bruce Chen he is today is the Bruce Chen he's going to be. For the most part, Mike Montgomery's not a finished product yet. He's still in the product, or he's process of development. So you're going to see ebbs and flows with a guy like Montgomery, who I saw him, you know, he did two innings. The first inning I thought was really, you know, it was pretty poor. He had spotty command. You know, I charted the entire inning. His arm still was fast. He was still throwing downhill, but he was rushing. His pace was all messed up. He was 91 to 93 in the fastball. It was missing. The curveball was a little flat. He wasn't staying on top of it. The second inning he came in, he was a lot better. You know, he worked at a good pace. His fastball was crisp. His breaking ball was crisp. So I thought that was some improvement in inning. That's something I'm looking for in a very small sense. With a guy like Chen, I think his performance matters because what you see is what you're going to get. And if you see crap, you can pretty much forecast it. Oh, man, this is crap. This is so crap. But with Montgomery, you know, he's going to be crap some days, and he's going to be brilliant others. And that's one of the beauties of spring training, is that you see a lot of these young guys go through these growing pains, and there's a ton of scouts around, and there's a ton of pressure because there's jobs and assignments on the line. You know, you want to be impressive in camp. You want to get to the major leagues. That's where the money is. You know, and so there's a lot riding on that first day. see that was a good performance in the second inning.
Yeah, and you talked about Montgomery and the tiebreak in your article, Bedard, and you know, it's hilarious. And honestly, I should have just had you come on today and just read this diary entry because I love it so much.
It's really talk more about his diary.
Yeah. You know what? The guy's going to come on the show. I'll promote his work. I don't care. But you did say that Montgomery was up and down, and somewhere Kevin Goldstein was crying and smiled and said, I'm not a big fan of this. And, but the second inning was better because Montgomery worked faster, had a smoother delivery, and more consistent release, which resulted in better location. But you thought that that might have something to do with that. Eric Hosmer were probably giving a pep talk, and he's probably what? So. Just so funny to see this, like, the question was Mary, and it's like, Jesus, God.
And there's no actually, I want to stick on Mike McCoy for a second because,
sure.
I mean, with everything that's been happening with the Royals right now and coming up, I mean, Mike Montgomery, for so many reasons, could be the linchpin for the Royals. I think he a lot of people felt at him that way because of he being, I mean, all the Royals had, you know, a year ago today, the Royals had a lot of good pitchers. But Mike Montgomery is the only one you consistently heard being projected as that ace potentially. You know, Duffy was probably more of a 2-3 guy, and the same with your Dwyers and your John Williams. But, well, John, yeah, maybe a different story, but he's got Tommy Johnson different issue. So with Mike Montgomery, like, what do you think was the issue last year? And did you see, well, you said you saw some improvement from inning to inning, but what you saw from him so far in spring training, it might be too early to tell, but has he been correcting that? I mean, is there hope for Mike Montgomery at this point?
There's a lot of hope that he's not going to be an ace, and, you know, that's just not going to happen. There's nobody in the system that's going to be an ace for the Royals, and there are very few aces in baseball in general. Montgomery has a chance to be a 2-3 and a good one, and I think that he can actually get there. I think his floor is actually pretty high. He's a big guy, you know, and he has long arms, and he has some mechanical hinges, and he could do better, he could be cleaner with his delivery. Part of the problem is he had some shoulder-related injuries, and sometimes when a player goes through, you know, sometimes a dead arm or shoulder fatigue or whatever, they don't adjust their mechanics accordingly and get into a lot of trouble that way. That's how a lot of Tommy Johns happen. I'm not saying he's got it that way, but I'm saying that he's got some funk in his delivery. When he's smooth, he's a dynamic pitcher. He's a guy who's 92, 94, can touch 95. He's got a very good changeup and a very good curveball. You know, he's a complete pitcher with good size, ability to pitch downhill. When he's mechanically consistent, but when he's inconsistent, he's all over the place, and he's an injury waiting to happen. I think that, you know, I don't know what he's going to contribute this year. I don't think he's ready, to be honest with you. I think he might need another half a season in the minors before throwing into the wolves.
So then, do you possibly see him? I mean, I don't know how you are on how you feel about comparisons to other players, but like when you look at someone like Jonathan Sanchez, who has that kind of similar skill set, and then he's kind of that power left-handed pitcher. I mean, is that somewhere where Mike Montgomery can be like that, just maybe inconsistent at best, or do you see he's just a different sort of pitcher?
Yeah, I mean, he's not as wild. Sanchez kind of takes effectively wild to the brink of the definitions. I'm not sure Montgomery's going to fit that at all. I think that it's about consistency with him. It's about mechanical consistency. If he can pitch like Mike Montgomery, then he can be a 2-3. If he can pitch like, you know, the Mike Montgomery that loses his release points and starts, you know, his pace changes, you know, like a clock in between pitches, and he'll be, you know, 10 seconds in between the pitch, and then 30 seconds in between the pitch, and then 15 seconds in between the pitch, and his pace is just all messed up. He's not in a rhythm. He's not finding fluidity in his delivery. If he can be the pitcher who's in rhythm, he's a pitcher who can pitch in the middle of a major league rotation. It's just not going to happen right out of the chute.
We are talking with Jason Parks on the Royal Man Report. Jason can be read at baseballperspectives.com, and he can also be heard on the Up and In podcast, which, you know, quite frankly, is the best baseball podcast on podcast world in circles today. But we've got a few more. We have a few more minutes. We are at least how long we have with him. He's on a podcast that goes 7-8 hours sometimes. So just assume that we have another couple of minutes with Mr. Parks. But sticking with the rotation, Twitter blew up. Absolutely blew up here in Kansas City today because of 5 straight strikeouts by Danny Duffy. Golly, this is a kid that we haven't been real wowed by any of his statistics so far, any of his mechanics, any of his anything. And then he just lit the radios on fire about 2 weeks ago. He came on our program. thought he was today. He kicked ass into Baines. So we're fairly excited about that. But then again, we're Royals fans, so we know that, you know, pitching isn't always as good as people make it out to be. But what do you think Danny Duffy's ceiling might be?
I think he'd be a number three starter. You know, and that's not a bad thing. You know, what's wrong with a guy who can pitch 200 innings in the middle of a rotation at cheap prices for at least 3 years? You know, that's what the Royals need. I think he's a good pitcher. I think what's the best thing to hear is a kid that wants it. You know, wants a big thing. It's really hard to reach the highest level of baseball and, you know, get it around to fail. It's important to see a guy build himself back up and say, well, you know what, I'm gonna kick ass. It's my time, this is me. You know, when a player, especially a pitcher, takes that sort of responsibility, good things are always possible. The maximum effort from a young arm is off the field and on is what you want to see. And that's great for the Royals. If he becomes a 3 starter and you can bring Montgomery into eventually be a 2-3 starter, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's inexpensive quality pitching. You can't ask for anything more than that.
We're joined in studio today by our Fletcher Disco, Justin Heath on Twitter, and French Quarter KC is a big Jeff French Quarter fan. You've been talking about Will Myers could really make a name for himself. If Will Myers does continue to break the way he has been, is this French Quarter's last year at the Royals, or how do you think Will Myers and French Quarter coexist on this team?
Well, I mean, French Quarter is actually a great person to have on a team. You know, he's been there. He broke in early. You know, and what better example to have around a lot of these young kids that the Royals are looking to build around than a guy who was brought up to the major leagues at such a young age and was able to hold on, which isn't easy. I mean, there's a lot of pressures involved. And everybody I know in baseball, every single person I know, loves Frank Gore. Loves him. Loves the person. Loves the man. On a team, you know, there's still a lot of things that Frank Gore can bring to the table that a lot of people don't really like about him. But, I mean, I love watching him throw baseball. You know, he's still got some pop. He's not going to walk. If you know, he's not going to reach base on a high clip, and that's fine. He's going to get over it. He's going to make some contact. He's got some power. He's got a crazy arm. He's a really good guy with a lot of experience. It's a good guy to have on a team. Next year, though, Will Myers, that's his year.
So regardless, that I believe they signed Frank Gore to a 2-year deal this year and next. So regardless, you think Will Myers starts next year and Frank Gore just plays in somewhere?
You know, Frank Gore might be the guy that gets squeezed out a little bit. I'm not saying he'd be off the team. I'm just saying that, you know, when a young guy comes up, you know, they're not going to throw him to the Wolves completely. You know, Will Myers is not going to play 162 games next year. That's how you think Will Myers is up at some point in the 2012 season, and I think he has the starting right fielder in 2013.
Well, speaking of Frank Gore and how he came up at an early age, I'm kind of curious. I saw Kevin Goldstein said something the other day on Twitter about how Bubba Starling maybe has about a 50% chance of actually making it into the big leagues, period.
I don't even know if it's 50, but I don't know if I go 50. I'd probably say 25.
Really?
Oh. Yeah,
that money spent. That's pretty
good. I think that's the way with every, I mean, that's got to be with every prospect. I mean,
he's a high school kid. Yeah. He never really played a lot of baseball. I mean, he never focused on baseball. This is an athlete first and a baseball player second. He's coming out of high school to think that he's going to make the major leagues, giving you 25% chance of that, I think those are really, really good odds. Because you have to factor in that if he makes it to the major leagues, he's probably a superstar.
So, is it kind of like a Brandon Weeden guy?
No.
Okay. Is he? No. I might be calling him to be a quarterback. That's what I maybe thought.
No, I'd like to see. I kind of want to see him be a quarterback anyway, just because he's so like it. But I'm
sorry.
I will say this. I know he's going to go to Nebraska.
That's what I want to see.
If you were going to go to UT, that'd be different. I want to say, you know, you should forego the major league. He's got a long way to go as a baseball player. He first has to learn how to play baseball. I mean, he knows how to play baseball. He's able to play at the professional level and really hard-nosed baseball. It'll help when he's focusing on baseball. He has a lot of physical gifts. I mean, he has physical gifts that I'm not sure anybody in the minor leagues can actually equal. I mean, all of them, I don't field and at the plate, there's just a huge gap between his present and his future. And when you have a gap that wide and a kid that young, you know, there are long odds to reach it. It doesn't mean it's out of the question, but look, I think it's not necessarily boom or bust, but you're probably either going to have a superstar here or you're going to have a guy who just isn't going to do it.
Yeah, and I think we, last time we had a show, I mean, we're only maybe just a couple weeks removed from when he actually signed. And so we've kind of had a similar discussion, but maybe he might not make it, and he's got a 25% chance. But if he fulfills that 25%, I mean, we could look back and say, you know, maybe he should have been. Maybe he was the best player in this draft. I mean, isn't that kind of his ceiling?
Well, his ceiling is the best player in the draft. His ceiling is the best player in baseball.
I just want to say, Dave, I wanted to make it, of course I wanted to make it, because first of all, he seemed like a really good guy from the interactions I've had with him and what have you, but I would love to see it made if we could just even 1 year of Hosmer and Bob Starling on the same team would be freaking phenomenal in Kansas City.
When we had Kevin on the show, I asked him some question about projecting a few years in the future, and he said, never do that, and I'm going to catch myself sometimes looking at these two. I catch myself sometimes thinking 2015, I mean, what this Royals team could have, I just said, I'm not going to get to it.
That's pretty fantastic, but bringing it back to the now, let's do a couple of quick hits here, and then we'll let Jason Parks from Baseball Perspectives go. But a couple of guys that are not prospects anymore necessarily, but maybe you've had a chance to look at them this year. First off, let's start with Otero had a really good second half last year. Can this guy actually be a legitimate number two or just a number one for this team, or was the second half last year just a fluke?
No, I mean, for the 2012 Royals, yeah, he can stay top of rotation. For a division winning team, no, he can't. I mean, I think he, and that's not that he's going to be a jerk, I'm just being honest here.
I think
that he has legitimate skill, and I'm not trying to say he missed it. I mean, it was legitimate skill he paid a lot of money for. He's not a top of rotation guy, and yet he did have an impressive second half of the year. I do think that he can repeat that on occasion, but I think that he's probably a 2-3. You know, and he's just a really, really expensive 2-3, maybe more of a 3.
The Royals went out and got themselves a really great utility player named Yuniaski Bencourt.
Yuniaski Bencourt?
He's fantastic. Yeah, he is the most hated person in the Midwest. There are equal hate groups for Yuniaski Bencourt and Albert Pujols. I think he's not welcome on this Royals team. What's your opinion, or what's the national opinion of Union? Are the Royals crazy for bringing him in as a guy that might play three times a week?
No, I mean, look, I understand the hatred. You know, he's fun to hate. I wish, it's not because he's really good. It's just because he's good enough. You know, he's capable enough, I think is a better way of putting it. He is capable of playing at the major league level. He is capable of being a utility player. Is he a cost-effective one? No, but you know, the Royals don't have somebody that they developed that can fill that role right now. You know, looking back on the Cologne draft, you know, that's a player that should be filling some sort of spot on the Royals right now.
You got to admire a team that has this intense hatred for Yuniaski Bencourt and also employs Chris Getz. So, you know,
yeah, that's just terrible.
The only reason that Chris Getz is here is because you're back. Chris Getz, you know, but Chris Getz is so happy. He's so happy. Thanks for coming back.
No, I don't have a problem with him. I mean, he's not my favorite player. He's definitely not a star in this league, but for what he is, if you just accept what he is, he's fine.
Talk around here is that we're going to have a bench of Uni and Getz for sure, and Dyson. And then after that, it's between Meyer and Kuzmanoff. Who would you rather have as that last bench guy?
I'd probably rather have Kuz. You know, I've seen some good swings on the ball. It's not a good bench. It's not something that I've given a lot of thought to. It's not a good bench.
We got Uni, as you understand.
Started watching the team, and I kind of thought that Kane was a bench guy for a while, and now I'm starting to think that Kane's a starter. I really have liked what Kane has done himself.
Well, Jason, we're kind of wrapping things up here with Jason Parks on the Rogue Man Report, and Jason, I have something that's kind of baseball related, but I want to get your thoughts on it. I saw this tweet from you after the Super Bowl, and I got to issue not follow. That's an outstanding follow. Whether it's baseball season or not.
Yes. Thank you.
That was fun. But, so the tweet you said was, quote, why are so many diehard baseball fans insecure about football? You act like you just found a magnum cover of your girlfriend's past, end quote. you know, and I saw it. I think I retweeted it at the time. I thought it was perfect. And I just, I'm wondering if your thoughts on it. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, I work in baseball, and a lot of the people in my talk on my timeline are baseball fanatics, or they work in the game themselves. And I like football. You know, I like a lot of sports. I'm a huge soccer nut. I love football. I was raised in Texas, you know, Christ's sake. I mean, I had my high school football games, and more, it had 17,000 people out. You know, Friday Night Lights is real, because I've lived in it. So I grew up in the football culture. I love the Dallas Cowboys. I love watching football. You know, and so many people on my timeline are so, you know, weirded out and threatened by football. And the second football was over, my timeline just erupted with people saying, now we can watch football. Baseball's over. Baseball's, we can get ready to spring training. It's like football was standing in the way of baseball. I mean, come on. It's not in the way. You know, it's just not the sport you follow. Just get over it. Whatever, just, you know, you'll be all right.
Well, tell that to the parking attendants out of the Kansas City Sports Complex when they have an event that happened on the same day. It's like the end of the world out there. We know we had that happen last year. I think it was out here in Georgia. I don't know more about condoms. Yeah. let's talk more about it. No, wrapping it up here. Thanks again to Jason Parks from Baseball Perspectives for coming on. Also, TexasFarmReview.com. Check them out. They're both subscription sites, but they're both worth it. And Jason's doing a lot of really good work with the Texas Farm Review. If you're a baseball junkie like me, you just like to read everything that you can find on the internet.
This isn't in our notes, but you know, I'm sure you haven't been asked about Josh Hamilton in the last 3 seconds. But you know, that seems to be the epicenter of Texas baseball. But you think he's going to bounce back okay? After all his troubles in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, a healthy Hamilton physically is a Hamilton that's going to break. That's just who he is. The off-the-field stuff, I mean, that might happen again. That's one of the reasons I don't see him signing long-term with the Rangers. He's certainly a headache, but a healthy Hamilton, any team in baseball would line up to take him, but not every team's going to line up to pay him what he wants to get paid. Something like $20 million for 5 years. I mean, come on.
Well, we're going to thank you, Jason, for taking about 30 to 45 minutes here today. It's a hit with us. But this is a little nobody's here on the Royal Man Report. You didn't hear this after before we had you come on here, but you actually paid us a great compliment. We would have wanted to say thank you for that. Way back in November, when you guys did the top 11 for the Royals, you had said that us guys know our system, and you said you, those guys know their system. You don't talk like I do, so we're in there. But you said we know our system, and we really appreciate that. That's a lot of credibility to what we do, and we really appreciate that. So thank you very much. Check out the Texas Farm Review again. Check out his baseball perspectives work, and especially his diary. You're going to be out in spring training until the end, pretty much, right?
Yeah, I'll be able to close the camera.
So definitely follow him, because you get a lot about his Eric Hosmer love, and then you get more about Racing Myers and all the guys along with the Texas guys. But he's right there turning the rules too, so check him out on Baseball Perspectives. Jason Parks, thank you very much for coming on today.
All right, guys. I really appreciate it. Take care.
You too. Bye. Well, that was Jason Parks. Jason Parks always makes me happy to have him on the air, because he's such a quality guy. He was the first national guy we had on, and that means something to me. I know a lot of people, especially Chris, give me crap about how sentimental I am about how this show has been over the years, or over the year, almost exactly a year.
Yeah, that was totally a love affair. Done. You can't first get together with you, or I thought you were hoping to flip pretty much.
Hey, you know what? I'll take that. Jason Parks is a quality guy who has a national sports podcast, and honestly, there's a lot of things that we could do that they do really well, and
there's a lot of things and a lot of podcasts they could do that we could do really well.
Right. Anything's better than Rambling More.
Say
to an eye to the fourth guy. That would have been my fault. You know, I tried to get, actually, let me jump on this and then we're going to break.
parts of baseball. We like this. Nobody following his work. Very, very, very good work. So, yeah,
really, I like Jason Parks one more time.
Yeah, I just love.
Apparently, Jason Wade Pang's Mary World. Hey, if you haven't had a chance, you should read Professor Parks's
Diary of the Trade of Baseball's Talents. See, this is what the show's become. It used to be Mike and Troy and Troy and Mike.
Oh, the Royal Man Report.
Right, and I've been on Royal Man. I've been on Royal Man. Let's say that every week.
If you don't have internet connection, I'm pretty sure during the Royal season, you can find those diaries kept between Troy's tights.
And according to some media outlets, it's the Royal Man Report now. Anyway, so that's fine.
We're on Fox Sports. You guys
didn't hear about the
song.
Definitely work. see some kickout patterns where they would both line up, where Tebow would line up as a wide receiver or a back, and he'd kick the ball right down, and then they'd throw it downfield. But there's no way Tebow can get out into, you know, and catch a ball. So that kind of takes away from your wildcat. I think I said Tebow, but that maybe can get out.
I understand that Manning wants to run the offense. And Manning's not going to run an offense that brings Tebow in as a second quarterback, such running back, whatever he's going to do. There's no way he's going to be like, you know, let's do that. I just don't see that happening. Manning's he's too passing oriented as opposed to a running quarterback.
Well, apparently on Arizona, according to Heather Duke's mouth mom, or a little French's mom, she says that Denver, Arizona, and Miami are in the race. Watch those out. But there's no mention of KC, which is fine. I don't care what they're saying down in Arizona.
Nick Wright is on those billboards.
Which is also interesting because from here in Kansas City, it seems like it's Denver, Miami, and Kansas City, and no real mention of Arizona.
Yeah.
Sam
Miller, a good friend of the show, Sam Miller, has a couple articles up where the Chiefs are actually talking. The Chiefs don't talk about anything. And both the general manager has said and the owner has said that they're looking at Manning as a roster. It's out there. It's in the air. And they never let that happen. So if they're not actually making a good move for him, suppose that Condon had said that he was really impressed with the Chiefs' offer. So there's something there. We just don't know how much. And, you know, one thing to follow up on that, since we are a baseball show primarily. So what does that do for the fandom of the Royals at the time if that happens, if the Chiefs do sign Manning? Does it kill Ryan Building towards?
I actually made a tweet about this. What I mean, if the Chiefs sign, I mean, that's going to be such a stratospheric event. And it's not just in Kansas City. The Chiefs become the epicenter of the 2012 NFL. It's not Peyton Manning. And
True.
But does it, but point being, when it's not related to the Chiefs going into the Royals, does that kill a lot of the fan momentum that they've already had going? Because a lot of what helped the Royals do with all the positive things they've been building was that the Chiefs have been building negative things. Lots of
do you remember 2003? The Royals got 500 and the Chiefs went 13-3. It's pretty tough to see that account. I don't think it's going to matter.
I just think this town is like a good town.
Yeah, it's got room enough for two good teams.
I've lived in Denver. That's a fantastic sports town. This is a great sports town.
Right, but it's not to say that all of a sudden it's going to be 2006 again where there's, you know, 12,000 people in the stands for the Royals. But just constantly now, all it's been for the last month, really, since spring training started, is just people cannot get enough Royals.
Yeah.
But if Peyton Manning signs, I mean, that's going to change. That shift is going to happen.
Well,
you know what? The thing that I always wondered, but the last week since I think it's released, that I wondered is,
you know, like Manning was 2 years old, look up at the star. Maybe the Royals, Manning, please come here.
Maybe the Royals would welcome such a thing because it not only would it might be negative, being it might kind of dial down some of the fan excitement, but it also might dial down some of the fan pressure.
If it has, might help if the Royals do come out and falter and not have them, they'll start fast right out of the gate.
Oh, without a doubt, you know who throws out the first pitch on opening day if he signs. I mean, it's no doubt Manning would be your guy that would sign the first, would throw out the first pitch.
My head would explode. I just want to know.
That's my explosion right there.
So, I welcome it, and as Curtis Kitchen said, if he signs this week and Katie comes back in this game and Mizzou wins tonight, this town is going to be on fire for the next week. I welcome it. I love sports. I'm a big sports fan. It doesn't have to be about my team. And, you know, just the local team. I cared a lot more about the Big 12 tournament than I did the Pac 10 tournament. And, you know, the Huskers are awful. I cared more about them.
And the Huskers don't play in the Pac 12. They should be
better. Thank you. That's what I meant, the Big 10. I'm sorry.
B1G.
The B1G. The Pac 12, they have nothing for basketball. The Russell might actually be good in that league. They're awful. The Russell's tired. Their basketball coach is good. Nobody cares.
When they have a high five, they're
best. Yeah, exactly. Right about that. Nobody cares.
Colorado's actually based on the Pac 12, which says a lot
about the Pac 12. Fred Van Camp, he said that Nebraska's the fifth best coaching job in Nebraska for basketball. Anyway, I guess we're going to end it here.
It's a round one when it just goes to dead air and you're all four of us just sit here and go,
that's what I play the outro. Thanks to Jason Parks for coming on. Thanks to all of our chatters, of course, in the room. I'm Troy Wilson.
I'm Ben Bang's big fan.
I absolutely have no idea what I'm doing.
I'm Justin Abbey. Go Frenchie Raja.
And go week at some point. Go to the World Wide Report. We're on the Bounty Hills. Go Network.